Good morning and welcome to Step Into the Light. We're your hosts. I'm Patty Sheen.
And I'm Jean L. Fury. Thank you for listening.
Together, we will introduce you to people who have found their way out of the dark shadows of life and back to light.
And those who, through various ministries and creative endeavors, lead others on their journey from darkness to light.
Good morning again, everyone, and welcome to today's show. Our guest for today, E. Marie, is a writer and dedicated follower of Jesus Christ. She works in the medical field for over 25 years. After completing her BSHS, she became a health educator and received international credentials in childbirth education and lactation consulting. She has served as a women's Bible study leader and participates in local and online writers' groups and a book club. In the past 3 years, E. Marie has written a romance comedy speculative fiction story, completed 2 books in a middle grade young adult suspense trilogy, and has begun work on a speculative fiction trilogy based on biblical gardens. A Snowflake's Adventure, a children's picture book about God's love and exciting purpose for each child, will be published in October of 2021. Good morning, E. Marie, and welcome to Step Into the Light.
Well, thank you, and thank you for having me. I appreciate being here. Thank you.
E. Marie, it is wonderful to have you with us, and I want to offer to our listeners that in honor of 9/11, we have a special introduction for today's show. We are offering something a little different. Our guest, E. Marie, will narrate a short story she has written titled The Penthouse. We encourage you to listen carefully and remember those who lost their lives and those who suffered so much in the aftermath of September 11th, 2001.
The morning began like most others. Hammett hurried onto the balcony while securing the knot in his tie. After 42 years, the fit of his black suit and crisp white shirt still stirred butterflies in my stomach. I poured 2 cups of black coffee and Hammett buttered the toast, our usual pre-work breakfast. Between bits of conversation, I followed the movements of a jogger plodding his way through Central Park, a view we pay dearly for. As September mornings go, humidity already presented a challenge, but the pale blue sky and mid-60s temperature offered Hammett a perfect 7-mile bike ride to his office in the New York City's Twin Towers. He pushed his plate away and gazed at the tall green trees. An occasional hint of autumn splendor painted the leaves. He leaned back in his chair and clasped his hands behind his head. I enjoyed him this way, relaxed, with a slight upturn in his lips. Are you sure you have to finish out the week? Oh, if only I'd bitten my tongue. Instead, the words rang like an alarm clock. Hammett looked at his watch, then sprang from his chair. I promised Julia I would. He bent down and kissed my forehead. Just 3 more days. He touched my shoulder and I held onto his hand. I gazed into his deep blue eyes, the worry lines in his forehead more pronounced than I'd ever noticed. There were words I wanted to say. Words like, "You don't owe her anything. I've always admired your dedication, but it's such a beautiful day. Let's ride the ferry." Deep inside, I knew it wouldn't help if I said them. We've married 2 years before we graduated college. Hammett began his career as an intern and continued to work for the same marketing firm for 40 years. I stayed home and raised our children. Hammett climbed the corporate ladder until he had earned a seat at the table, chief financial officer. With our debts paid, our children's future secured, and nothing preventing us, we sold our home in the country and bought a penthouse on the Upper West Side. Our wallets took a wallop, so I accepted a part-time job as an at-home editor. After 10 years, we achieved our dream. We paid off the mortgage and breathed easier. We owned the penthouse, free and clear. Though we had means, we'd chosen to live with fun and frugality in mind. We'd gone on a few cruises, but stayed in hostels when we toured Europe. our friends bought yachts, we rented kayaks. Skiing in Aspen never made it on our radar. The nearby Poconos filled that need. Several months ago, we met with our investment banker. Hammett signed his retirement papers a month later. At his firm's request, he agreed to stay on as a consultant on an occasional basis and at his discretion. That afternoon, we went through our scrapbooks and picture albums. Every page told the story of our lives. Days, weeks, months, and years flashed before our eyes. Though I hadn't voiced the thought, I wondered how much more time we'd have together. As if he read my mind, Hammett took my hand. This is the beginning of the rest of our lives. Whatever time we have together, we'll make the most of it, you and me. A tenuous smile spread his lips. The sun warmed me as I stood at the edge of the balcony and waved to Hammett. His bike pointed toward his truck to work. The path through Central Park a little busier now than 30 minutes ago. He stopped to throw me a kiss, something he hadn't done in quite a while. I pretended to catch it and threw one back. He smiled and rode down the sun-dappled pathway. No longer able to see him, I lingered on the balcony, absorbed in the moment. Hammett's words from months ago, the rest of our lives, flashed through my mind like a shooting star. Somehow, the thought took me back several years to when our daughter-in-law and son Solomon, an administrator for Cedars-Sinai Hospital, traveled to Haiti. Unable to conceive, they adopted a newborn at Port-au-Prince. Solomon returned a changed man. "Mom, Dad, you've got to go there. We take everything for granted. They have nothing, and yet they're the happiest people I've ever met." A week later, Solomon lay in a hospital bed with severe abdominal pain, diarrhea, and fever. Diagnosed with malaria, he slipped into a coma. Several days later, he left our lives forever. Hammett and I grieved in different ways. He poured himself into his work and let it consume him. "Can't we talk about this?" I pleaded. He shrugged, undressed, and fell asleep the second his head hit the pillow. To cope, I skipped meals, lots of them. If we were invited out, I sometimes pretended to eat. Other times, I polished off my plate like a ravenous wolf. When my stomach rebelled, unable to handle its contents, I excused myself to find the nearest restroom. My friend Jessica noticed my unhealthy weight loss and eating patterns. She invited me out to lunch. Instead, she took me to meet with her therapist. After several sessions, I suggested Hammett go with me. "Don't ever ask me to go to one of those shysters. It's mind over matter. You think they'll help you, but all they do is take your money." Then he pointed his finger at me. "Besides, I'm not the one that needs help." In 5 weeks, I'd gone from a healthy 152-pound, 5'6" woman to a lethargic 129 pounds. I knew I was in trouble when I caught a glimpse of my skin-taut ribcage in the mirror. It didn't surprise me when I woke up in a hospital bed, disoriented and bewildered, with tubes and monitors all around. Hammett stroked my hair. "I found you passed out in the bathroom. I'm so sorry. I should have done something." His eyes met mine. "We'll get counseling, the two of us. We'll get better." We did get better. Hammett made it a rule he'd get home by dinner time every workday, and he stuck to it. Over the course of time, our therapy sessions went from twice a week to once a month. We learned so much about each other, and as Solomon had said, we began to appreciate what we'd taken for granted. By now, our daughter Madeline had graduated medical school and joined a small emergency medicine practice in the city. Our daughter-in-law visited often with our grandson, Oliver. He lit up the room and kept us young. We enjoyed spoiling him with toys and books, clothes and electronics. A shiver crawled along my spine. I glanced at my watch, stunned that I'd daydreamed on the balcony for so long. I hurried to clean off the table and brought the breakfast dishes to the sink, then turned on my favorite TV morning show to accompany my mundane chores. Water splashed over my hands, and I hummed and scrubbed the plates. We interrupt this broadcast to bring you. I turned toward the television. Its picture captured my attention. The camera lens zoomed in close, as if I rode on the wings of a misguided jet. The commentator's words pricked my ears. Sirens and horns blared outside and in the background, while the TV newscaster narrated the uncertain reality. Clear blue skies above the Twin Towers blackened with billowy smoke. Again and again, images of the plane as it flew into the North Tower appeared on the screen. I flipped through the channels. There had to be some mistake, maybe some sick reenactment of War of the Worlds. I hurried to the balcony and looked toward Manhattan, to the steel towers that graced our view. God help us! Dark smoke rose into the air until it entombed the silvery tower. Back inside, I grabbed the phone from the receiver, relieved I still had dial tone. Before I pushed a button, the phone slipped from my sweat-drenched palm. My breath caught in my throat. The TV camera tracked another plane soaring at low altitude on approach to the South Tower. My body crumpled to the floor and my heart hammered as flames erupted through the tower's jagged opening. The newscaster's voice faded away. Eerie figures fell from the windows of the North Building, surreal and horrible. Frightened people dotted the street, too stunned to cry. Their confusion matched my own. My cell phone rang. I leaped off the floor and raced to my desk, then read the number on the screen. Hammett, where are you? For a nanosecond, everything moved in slow motion before rocketing forward. Shattered glass and noise rumbled in the background. Desperate screams almost drowned out Hammett's words. I dug my nails into the desk. Hammett, I can't hear you. I yelled over the chaos that probably surrounded him. He sniffled. You were right. I shouldn't have come to work today. His words came between stilted breaths. I gripped the phone so tight my hand ached. I could only imagine what Hammett saw, how he felt at that moment, the thoughts going through his mind. I wanted to say something of comfort, something to encourage him. Hammett, I can't live without you. I don't want to. The words left my lips, and oh, how I wished I could take them back. They weren't helpful, or what he needed to hear. He sobbed, hard, and I'll never forget the grit in his voice as he gasped and choked out these words. Claire, you've made my life so happy. I wish I had a million more. Take care of Madeline, Suzanne, and Oliver. I'll watch over you. The line went dead. Hammett! Hammett! Bile burned in my throat. Thunder rolled in the distance, or did the noise reverberate from the television? I raced into the living room and sank to my knees. Oh, dear God, no! The North Tower crumbled to the ground. Glass and metal hurled through the air. Frantic people scrambled in every direction, only to have ash and soot swallow them. The TV screen became a gray-black blur. The camera shook as the crew darted for safety, their nervous voices lost in the melee. Someone screamed. Her shrill, loud voice filled the room and pierced my ears. Her tears flowed down my face into trembling hands. Pieces of priceless pottery sailed through the air, their broken shards less hysterical than she. I had to stop her before she lost complete control. The wet carpet under my face became my first wake-up call. Too weak to push myself up, I laid there. Garbled voices from the television drifted toward me, spewing words that ran together. A third plane crashed somewhere in Pennsylvania, its destination shy of its goal. A man wrung his hands and mumbled about the Pentagon, but the information didn't fully register. I forced myself to read the words on the screen, America under attack. Voices narrated their impromptu speculation. Eyewitnesses reported chilling accounts. Some commented about children in a nearby preschool whose parents would never pick them up. No one tried to explain why my husband had to die in the attack. Time lost its meaning. I don't know how long I laid there while the television commentators continued their analysis. Heat, humidity, and smoke wafted through my open windows. Damp hair stuck to my face. A blinking red light caught my eye, and I thrust myself off the floor. Cell phone plans were expensive, and I'd only given my number to a few people. I racked my brain but couldn't imagine who would have left me a message. My chest tightened. Engaged in a dizzy dance, I staggered like a shipwrecked sailor into the bedroom. I snatched the phone from my desk. Before I flopped on the bed, I grabbed a coverlet. Curled in a fetal ball, I clutched the phone. Spent nerves prevented me from listening to the message. My mind replayed conversations Hammett shared when he'd headed the safety committee. He equipped the offices with fire extinguishers and carried out routine fire drills up and down 37 flights of stairs. No wonder he stayed in great physical shape. Hope flooded my thoughts. I blew out a long sigh, pushed the button, and retrieved the only message. Hi, Mom. It's Maddie. It's about 8:37 on Tuesday morning, September 11th. I don't have to be to work at the hospital until noon today. These 24-hour emergency room shifts are brutal, and I haven't seen you guys as much as I'd like. I picked up some bagels and cream cheese at the deli you two are always raving about, and I'm going to take them up to Dad's office. I wondered if maybe you could join us. By the way, I got bored at work Sunday and weighed myself. Big mistake. So, before I eat these bagels, thought I'd take the stairs up to Dad's office. If it doesn't kill me, maybe I'll lose 5 pounds by the time I get there. Okay, I'm about to enter the stairwell, so I might lose reception, but I'll count off for as long as I can. Are you ready? 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12, 13, 16. People often ask why I've left this story unfinished. Well, let me ask you, if this were your story, your life, how would it end? Claire had no idea how radically her life would change on September 11th, 2001. She and Hammett seemingly had it all. The penthouse, the money, the future. Or so they thought. Though they'd planned for their financial goals to the last penny, they'd neglected their eternal destination. Maybe more time would have helped. But time's the one commodity none of us can buy. Unlike the fictional characters in my story who had to comply with how they were written, people have free will. We choose where we'll spend eternity. The Bible tells us that God sent his son Jesus into this fallen world to provide a way for us to go to heaven. Since Jesus lived a perfect life, his death on the cross paid the penalty for our sins. You might think being a good person is good enough. Well, if that were true, Jesus wouldn't have had to die for our sins. What's sin? Sin means to break the law, go against a moral code, to miss the mark. If we're honest, we've all missed the mark. When we ask Jesus Christ to forgive our sins, he comes and lives in our hearts. He makes us a new person. We trade our sin-filled life for a new one. That's what born again is all about. We're all given the opportunity to choose to live for Jesus. Our choice makes the difference between the hope of heaven or the horror of hell. We all remember the tragedy on September 11, 2001, the images we saw, the news accounts we heard, the stories we read. Maybe you had a relative, close friend, or an acquaintance who died in that horrible attack. Ready or not, the day will come when we too breathe our last breath. Like the characters in this story, perhaps you've succeeded in achieving your financial goals. None of that will matter if you haven't chosen Jesus and secured your eternal destination. To do that, simply ask Jesus into your heart today. Read the Bible, His Word, and let Him lead you home.
Irma, your story is riveting and really makes a person stop and think about what their eternal destiny is going to be. So thank you so much for sharing that all-important message. Even though we know the penthouse is fiction, you shared a moving story that reflects what many experienced on 9/11. Would you add your personal thoughts of what you remember of that day?
Unfortunately, you know, there are a lot that suffered that day but continued to suffer and maybe even continue to suffer today. And it really is good to remember them, all that they've been through, and thank God every day that we still draw breath. Just amazing.
Yeah, there are still people today, right, that are dealing with the aftermath of this.
Definitely.
Either, you know, health-wise or the fact that they're missing whoever has passed away from it. So,
Right. Yeah,
lots of variables there, but lots to think about.
Yeah.
I did a show with a gentleman by the name of Robert Osler a while back, and he, oh my goodness, he has so many, wore so many different hats. He was a chaplain, and he talked about actually being there. I think he arrived like 48 hours after the event. Yeah, it was just, and I, if I'm not mistaken, he said that there were some, like, at least 2,000 families that still have absolutely no remains.
Oh.
To dispose of. It's just really tragic.
Yeah.
I remember probably the most vivid memory for me, besides actually watching on TV it happen in real time, was after the fact, people putting up posters of their missing loved ones on street corners, and the street corners just being plastered with people's pictures. That to me was just stunning. It was shocking to see the how primitively we had to go resort to getting any information out or finding any information about those who are lost.
Yeah, I recall that too. It was like Poster City, you know, wall to wall posters. But the other thing I remember too is yellow ribbons, and then stacks and stacks of flowers and candles. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
And, you know, I think that's one of the things that I love about 9/11, if there's anything to love, is the fact that we all came together. We all grieved. We all mourned. We all prayed. And, you know, like I was thinking about it just the other day in reviewing the story, how congressmen and women stood on the steps of the Capitol and saying, God bless America. I mean, when else has that ever occurred? And not that I wouldn't want to see it again, but I just, you know, the different pictures, the picture of ultimate sorrow and grief and horror, and then other pictures of just this unity and love, just things that you never would have expected. So, you know, they're kind of like juxtaposed to the really bad stuff on one end and the really a wonderful, heartwarming stuff on the other end that just, I don't know if we'll ever see that again in our lifetime.
Yeah, it truly did unite us as everyone in the country felt just the wholeness of it, right? The anger around it, the frustration of it, the sorrow, the deep, deep sorrow of it. Yeah, I agree with you. It was incredible.
You know, I think, you know, thinking about the significance that it holds for me, I just remember being so shocked. Like, how could that happen? America, we've never been attacked on our soil. how could that happen? I remember my children, one of our oldest was in college at the time, another senior, a sophomore, and then another one in grade school. And, you know, all gathered around the television looking at this, so appalled that first plane was one thing, but then as things continued to debilitate, you know, you just had that sense of what else could possibly happen to us in this day. It just seemed to never end. So I think just the shock, but for people who had to experience it or had to experience the fact that their loved one wasn't coming home, you know, just rippled on and on.
Yes, definitely. I agree with all that you ladies are saying. Yeah, the whole thing was just absolutely horrific. It was such a sad event to have happened to our country, and I just pray that it never happens again.
Amen. Amen. Never again. Yeah. Well, and isn't that one of the things that we say on 9/11? Never again. And we'll never forget. How could you forget? Right. Impossible.
Yeah. So, Emery, the penthouse conveys a strong salvation message. Tell us about your Christian background and when you became fully aware of the importance of this message.
My Christian background. At the time, I wasn't that grateful for it. First line of a song by Danny Gokey goes, "A lot of us grew up believing that at any moment we could lose it all, and that at the drop of a hat, God might turn his back on us." And that's exactly how I felt. I felt like there's no way that God was love, that he would drop a 10-ton anvil on me at any moment, and that would be the end of my life. So at the age of 19, I had researched various religions, and all that did for me was leave me confused, alone, and lost. I think in thinking about the images that I see in my mind of people walking the streets 9/11, that was the faces that I saw, you know, confused, alone, lost, just like beyond knowing what to do at that moment. And I think for a lot of us, that's a moment where we really either do search for God or recognize that he is God, that he is in control. There was nothing that we could have done that day to control the situation or what was going on. It just kept happening. But God knew, and he knew well in advance. And, you know, it finally came to that point, like the congressmen and women singing God Bless America, we needed God. As a 19-year-old, I needed God. I was desperate. I was beyond myself. And I think that's that moment where there is a turning in our heart, in our lives. We come to the Lord.
And I think that's true of a lot of us, E. Marie. We're leading a good Christian life now, but, oh, heaven help us if somebody looked back on our past.
Yeah.
Some of the things that we used to think back then, you know? I mean, I don't think a lot of us were good Christian people dedicated to the Lord back when we were younger. I know for me, I just kind of felt like I've got this in control myself. It doesn't take long for you to realize that, well, sometimes some people it does. It takes them a lifetime to realize that we do need God in our lives and how important that is. And especially your salvation message is so strong. I mean, we can plan for everything else in our lives. Look at me. I planned for that Alaskan cruise for over a year. Never happened. You can plan for a new job. You can plan for birth of a child. And there's nothing guaranteeing that that's going to happen. But death is the one that nobody is going to get out of. And yet, how many of us really plan for it?
True.
And Patty, I think younger is relative too, right? Because I don't know that I would have recognized I wasn't doing a bad job of being a Christian when I was younger. And yet, I catch myself now. And I believe 10 years from now, I'll look back on this time and go, wow, you really didn't have it together. You didn't know what you were doing then. You know, but it's in the moment. You do what you can in the moment.
Absolutely. Well, I think we all grow, and that's a wonderful thing.
And that's the grace of God, too. You know, he gives us grace for the screw-ups and all the things that, you know, we don't do or don't recognize we're doing. And, you know, loves us through it, and you know, thank God he brings us to that point where we either recognize or we want to grow in him because he's so loving and forgiving.
Yes. Amen.
Well, ladies, at this point, let's go to a short break. This is where I remind listeners that you are listening to Step Into the Light with hosts Jean Alfieri and Patty Sheen. Our guest today is E. Marie. At the beginning of the show, E. Marie shared with us a short story that she had written entitled The Penthouse. This is in honor of 9/11, which, of course, we will be remembering this Saturday coming up. We want to remind listeners, never forget what happened on that day and all of those who lost their lives and those whose lives were forever changed. And in a lot of ways, the lifestyle of all of us was changed on that day. I'd like to remind you that you can listen to this show on archive if you missed any portion of it, or hopefully you'll refer it to friends and family. You can find it on my website, which is PattySheen.com. That is spelled PattySheen.com. Go to the Blog Talk Radio at the top of the page. There you will find links to all of the shows we have recorded to date. Under each show is a more information tab, and that's where you will find links to E. Marie's website and any other social media that she may have. Likewise with all of our other shows. Also, this show will appear actually on the very first page of the website for about 4 weeks as well. So very easy to access. Like I say, we've been talking about 9/11 for the first segment of this show. And now we're going to talk about E. Marie's writing career. So with that, E. Marie, tell us, how long have you been writing and what motivated you to launch a writing career?
Well, I'm still laughing with that one because I'm not sure that my writing career has been launched. I've been writing seriously for like the past 3 years. God has granted me 10 writing awards in those 3 years, but I still feel like I have so much to learn. One of the things I knew from very early on, like when I could hold a pencil, that I wanted to be an author. I wanted to write, and I wanted to write for the Lord. As a child, I'd sit at a table and look out my bedroom window, and I'd imagine the world out there and the people living in it, the things that they did, what they had, how they looked, what work they were assigned, you know, that kind of thing. But at that time, as a little girl, I was chastised for writing because it wasn't a bona fide career. You couldn't make a living at writing. You had to be a teacher, a secretary, possibly a nurse, and definitely a wife. So those were the only options. And writing was daydreaming and non-productive. I went through my career as a medical transcriptionist, and then I got deeper into the medical world. But being a transcriptionist disciplined me to sit still, to listen a lot, and to learn. And I feel that being a writer, those are keys that you definitely need. If you can't discipline yourself to sit in a chair, you are never going to write a book. Well, I shouldn't say never. Maybe you could do it in Audible, but that book is going to be difficult to write. My other strong belief is that the Lord never wastes a minute. He's always working for our good and for his glory. And so everything that I went through my life, the negativity about writing, the other careers that I had, I feel like, you know, the Lord has kind of blessed that time and said, okay, this is what that was all about. I mean, sometimes I guess we don't get to see the final product, but in my life, I've kind of seen that with my writing career. So I think being on your show is launching my career. But we'll see what the Lord has to say about that.
Well, I'll tell you what, E. Marie, I'm glad you shared that because I grew up with that same around my loved ones and my family. It was like, well, this is probably a lot of fun for you, but you have to look at the real world when you grow up and get a real job, which I did. My real job was in nursing. But like you, in the back of my mind was always stories that I would write down. And you said you're not sure you've launched your writing career yet. If you really want to laugh, I've probably been writing, quote-unquote, seriously for the past 20 years. Oh, and I still don't have anything out there. So thanks to you and the critique group, I may be getting there someday. But no, I mean, it's something to really, like I think I wrote to you in an email. As soon as you put a pen to paper or let you board to a screen, you have launched your writing career. So
no, that's true. Yes.
E-Marie, here on Step Into the Light, our guests share a time in their lives that was difficult and how they found their way back to light. Would you share such an experience with us today?
Okay, this is going to be difficult, and I'm going to try my best to keep it together, but I feel like I'm, you know, like at that point somewhere between the darkness and hopefully walking to the light. We have had for the past almost 12 years a very precious golden doodle, Barkley. And about 4 weeks ago, we discovered that he had like this bump on his jaw. So going to the vet, we were told that this was like the most aggressive form of melanoma. Just this past week, we went to the vet again, and it had basically displaced the right side of his jaw, his teeth, his tongue, all of that. And you know, we talked about the various modalities for treatment, and we thought the best thing to do would be to put him down. And I won't go through all of that, but I can tell you that if you or any of your listeners have gone through that, it is not an easy experience. It was the best for Barkley. It hurts incredibly, but while we weren't prepared for any of that, we missed Barkley. We hurt for Barkley, but Barkley is better now. And so that's the part that makes us know that we did the right thing and we just have to deal with the aftermath. But the interesting thing, while this was going on, Bert and I were praying, we were loving Barkley and just, you know, looking in those big brown eyes that he had. But I felt like the Lord was actually talking to me and saying, you know, the unconditional love that Barkley gave us is the unconditional love that he gives us. And even though the whole thing was painful, it's painful now, I get the picture of who God is even brighter because of what we saw with Barkley. God does love us unconditionally. And even when we do the wrong things or we mess up, he's there with his love and forgiveness. It just is very, very healing, very comforting to know that about God. I believe maybe the Lord will have to correct me, but I believe that we'll see Barkley again. That's my hope because Jesus as our shepherd leads us. I believe that he wouldn't abuse that analogy about shepherds and us being his sheep if there wouldn't be our loving pets in heaven. But I guess we'll find out someday. But anyway, that's where I feel like I'm somewhere between, you know, the healing process and needing to come full circle. Not there yet. And I think if listeners are in that situation, I am so sorry for you too. I know your heart hurts, but I do think that God provides hope.
Hey, Marie, I am going to pray for your healing and be patient with yourself. I'll offer to you that my husband and I, we adopt vintage. We call them vintage puppies. We like the old guys. We like the seniors. And so we probably experienced this, the passing of a fur hero more often than other families do. But I'll tell you, it doesn't make it easier. It is so hard. And yet, if this helps you, I would love for you to try this because we insist that the life should be celebrated just like people's lives are celebrated after they pass. And so at dinner, we will share our favorite stories of that dog. It never fails that we are left laughing in our chairs, even though we're crying, right? We're crying for the sadness and laughing at the same time for the happiness and joy that that dog brought to our family. And so I will offer to you that if that might be of some help, we celebrate that way when we lose a dog. And it's just, it reminds us all the love that we appreciated in that time that we had with that special dog.
That is an excellent suggestion. You know, I guess even though we haven't done it at dinner time, We have done it at various points during the day. Barclay was just so special. And getting up in the morning, he'd run in there with his great big paws and, you know, just slobber all over us. And, you know, we miss that, but it is a wonderful memory. And so thank you for that. That would be very healing. Thank you.
Of course. My pleasure. And be patient with yourself because, you know, sometimes we feel like it should be a certain amount of time and we should be fine. You know, it's been a month, I should be fine. It's been a year, I should be fine. And you know, the truth is, it is no different in healing from any other loss that we encounter. A slightly funny story that we still talk about is after our blind pug passed away, and we had been very mindful about having things picked up in the house so that the blind pug wouldn't trip over them, right? And so we were very meticulous about not, you know, just there wasn't junk around. We'll just put it that way. And the day after he passed, we came, both my husband and I came back from the gym, and he dropped his gym bag right in the middle of the kitchen floor. And I said, Wyatt's going to trip on that. You better move that. Cause why? And he's like, oh, that's how it's going to be. Huh? I go, yes, it's going to be that way for a while. So you better just pick it up so Wyatt doesn't trip on it. He's like, okay. I'm like, I'm not ready for things to change yet. You know, I want his dog bowl there. I want his toys in the corner. It's just, it doesn't help to pack it all away and think that it will be fine because it's a mourning. It's a process.
Absolutely. I agree. But that's a fun story. That's a fun story about Wyatt.
Well, thank you for sharing with us, E. Marie, because I know it is. It's gut-wrenching and heartbreaking when you lose a pet. My husband and I went through it quite a bit. And when we had two huskies, the last dogs we had were two huskies. And oh, my goodness, my husband just spoiled the heck out of those guys. And the first one passed away before my husband did. But the second one, he was kind of like a reminder of my husband, you know. And when he passed away, it was really hard because it was almost like, I know it was silly to think this way, but it was almost like my last connection wasn't true. But, you know, and he had like a brain cancer thing going on. And I had taken him to the vet one day because when we went for walks, it was like every once in a while he would just kind of trip. Like he would misstep, you know, and
yeah.
The vet said, yeah, I think something may be going on there. And several months later, I went to let him out and I looked out the window and he was just laying there in the front yard. And usually he would go do his business in the backyard. He'd trot around to the back. And I went outside and it was like he couldn't walk without walking in circles. It was, you know, it was really sad. And I took him back and she said, oh, yeah. She said, you know, it's time. So I waited 3 days before I euthanized him. I had my daughter and my granddaughter come over to say goodbye. And I spoiled him. I bought him hamburgers at Dairy Queen and fed him to him. And we went for little walks around the yard, you know, 4 or 5 times a day and did all these silly things that he enjoyed, you know, just. But, yeah, it is. It's very hard. But and I fully agree with you. E. Marie, I know that there is a rainbow bridge and that when we get to heaven, our pets are going to come bounding out of some green meadow and be so happy to see us. So
I picture them waiting by the front gate. That's where they'll be. They'll be waiting by the front gate.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I can't.
Thank you so much for sharing that with us, E. Marie. It is. It's a very tough time in a person's life to say goodbye to your fur babies.
It is. It really is. Never thought about it, you know, during Barclay's life. But I'll tell you what, it is difficult.
What
and
kind
you know,
of a dog was he? What breed was he?
He was a golden doodle. And Jean, I thank you, too, again, for also offering that. It does take time to grieve. It's, you know, we had him for 12 years. I can't imagine how long it'll take to say, okay, I think I'm feeling a little more normal today.
Yeah.
But, you know, those 12 years every day is so important and so precious that you don't just turn a corner 24 or 48 or, you know, whatever it takes later. It does take time.
Yeah. And you know what, Patty, too, you bring up a really good point. And although it may not have been the last connection to your husband for you, for many it is. I mean, there are people out there who have a dog to care for because they want a reason to live. And when that dog passes, that's a really, you know, I write a short little brochure for kids, right? Here's how to cope with the loss of a pet for parents to children. Mm-hmm. But there's a whole other version on seniors and how they need to be considered, you know, what is their life circumstance in this situation as well.
Right. One of the things about Barkley, the day I picked him up at the airport, oh, he just loved me. I was, you know, the sun setting on his life. And my husband came home from work, and Barkley never looked at me the same again. He and Bert were best buds, and that's how it was going to be. And, you know, ironically, with Bert's stage 4 cancer, and then, you know, Barkley ends up with this, like, aggressive form of melanoma. It was, you know, I think it was Bert, too, that it impacted him so much because this was his best buddy. But, you know, the irony that Barkley and Bert both had cancer, and Barkley goes first. And it's like, are you kidding me, Lord? You can't be doing this. You can't be serious.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But anyway, exactly.
When you remember, please pray for Bert, because Barkley would go and sit in his office. He'd sit under his desk,
It's hard for him.
On his foot, on any part of Bert that he could touch.
Yeah.
He was. So, you know, it was so sweet, but, you know, just made the hole so much deeper. So, yeah, thank you for praying. I appreciate it.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Well, Irma, would you share with us as much as you want to? Of course, you don't want to give the whole thing away because you want people to read your novels, but tell us about your novels, the ones in progress and the ones that you have completed, because I know you have some of both.
Right. Can I preface it by saying, you know, writing today is a whole lot different than, let's say, the little ditties that I used to write in childhood or high school or whatever. And the rules have changed so much that I hope you don't mind, but tongue in cheek, I don't think the Bible could get published today. I just, you can't write like that. You can't tell. You can't. Anyway, my heroes in writing, C.S. Lewis, Louisa May Alcott, Charles Dickens, they would have to do several edits and rewrites to get their books published. Life is a learning experience, and I appreciate that. It's just sometimes, you know, you look at these classics and you think, you've got to be kidding. Nobody would ever balk at the way they wrote back then. My MGYA suspense trilogy is set in the 1930s, early 40s, and so the prose are a lot like back then, because I can get away with it for that time period. So the one that I've been working on, and I actually do have a publisher interested, I have to do some rewriting, and I have a agent who said, yeah, you know, you do those rewrites and I'll take you. So thank God I have that. But thank you. Well, thanks to your help too, Patty. So this MGYA is a suspense trilogy, and I really am enjoying writing it. The other one, I have a rom-com that's also speculative. It's sitting on a shelf collecting dust, but it was a lot of fun to write because it's got a lot of humor in it, and I think that's probably more my personality. The other book that I've written, co-authored with Dave Parks, and it's about Back to the Garden, Eden. It could be a trilogy, and I want to do more of gardens in the Bible. So we're working on editing that to be able to publish it. But probably the book that I'm most excited about today is a book that I'm going to self-publish that's called A Snowflake's Adventure, and I hope that comes out in October. It's a children's picture book, and it's been on the shelf for a couple years now. In fact, I don't know if you remember this, Patty, but when I sent it to you for critiquing, you said, you know, I think somebody else wrote this book. And I said, no, that was me a couple of years ago. Anyway, I'm finally going to pull the plug and self-publish it this October.
Yeah, tell us a little bit more about that snowflake adventure, Emery. What inspired you to write it? What message does it hold for children?
Well, I began having grandkids several years ago. I didn't have them. My daughter and son did. But I began praying for these sweet grandchildren and just looking at the world through their innocence and their openness to the Lord and wondering what the Lord would have in store for their lives. And I realized these grandkids of mine are in the most loving homes and environments. They come and stay with us for months at a time, and we just pour out our love into them, tell them about the Lord and how much they're loved. But it makes me wonder, it makes me sad for children in our country, throughout the world, that maybe don't have that love in their family, in their homes, and don't know anything about God. And I thought, well, what could I do to change that? And the story just started writing itself in my mind. It was wintertime, the snow is falling, and just beautiful setting. And I was thinking, well, Lord, how can I put that into words? So I just started writing the snowflake and story and how unique every snowflake is, but that also translates to children. They're each so unique. They each have a purpose, and God created them on purpose. They were not a mistake. They were given breath and life by God. So that's the message I try to convey in this book.
Excellent. Emery, I know that you have a special donation opportunity that comes with the sale of each copy of A Snowflake Adventure. So would you tell us about that?
Yes. As I was trying to conceptualize pictures for this book, I just had this feeling in my heart that once I got it all together, if I could get it all together, if I could find an artist, for every book I sell, I want to donate one book to Operation Christmas Child and Samaritan's Purse for their shoebox drive. So that's my goal. For every one book that I sell, one book to be donated for Operation Christmas Child. And I also have a friend who is translating the book for me into Spanish. So that way I'm not only sending this to English-speaking children, but it can be sent around the world to Spanish-speaking nations.
That's fantastic.
Yes, that is amazing.
Well,
that
thank
is just
you.
Wonderful.
It's funny, you know, you go through life and you go through writing and our critique groups, and you never realize the purpose that God has for bringing people together. And it's just amazing to me.
I agree. So, Emery, what advice would you share with new authors?
Well, from my years and years of experience, I would say pray, write, repeat. Surround yourself with people that encourage you, but also the naysayers, because you learn something from both camps. It's great. It's awesome to be encouraged, and you live for that. You live for the truth in those moments, but the naysayers teach you in a different way. And so I think it's a good balance. If you always listened to it, it's like if we always ate sugar, our bodies would disintegrate, fall apart, we would be unhealthy. So every once in a while, you got to eat that broccoli and swallow that kale, whether you want to or not, and it does benefit you. So just take it on the chin, keep it in your heart and your mind. In my thinking, like I said before, God never wastes a moment. So one of those words will come at you at an opportune moment, and you'll remember, oh, yeah. You know, those passive verbs, I got to ditch those and I got to use a more active verb. Or don't start a sentence with an ing word or whatever it is. But my other piece of advice comes from out of the blue, and I hope you don't mind. But I would tell everybody, every wannabe writer, watch the movie The Man Who Invented Christmas, because you'll get used to having a crowd of characters around you wherever you go. People are always, or these characters are always talking in your head. Have a notepad, write down some of what they say. Some of it is going to be golden, and some of it is going to be goulash, and you need to get rid of it. But the movie to me was such yeah, that's exactly what happens. Like, my husband will look at me and he'll say, I know you're talking to one of your characters. yeah, could you please be quiet? But it's just so real to a writer's life. So that's my advice. Pray, watch The Man Who Invented Christmas.
Love it.
E. Marie, did you do the illustrations for the book as well as the writing?
I wish. I wish I was an illustrator. I wish I had any artistic talent. I do for stick figures, but that's it. So, no, I did not do the illustrations. Jack Foster is a prolific and gifted artist, and he agreed to work with me, and he has been so gracious. Jack, could you change this? Could you tweak that? And I am so, so grateful for his talent and his heart for the Lord. He just has been impressive from day one, and he's the real deal. He doesn't come across like I'm in this for the money or make sure you tell your friends about me. None of that. He just is so genuine, and I just appreciate him so, so very much.
Nice. Well, I'm glad that you found somebody that you could work with so compatibly for the book. That's great. And I think the donation is absolutely wonderful.
I am so excited, and I just can't believe this amazing opportunity that the Lord gave me. It's just been fantastic. And thank you. Thank you so much.
E. Marie, it's been such a delight to have you with us today. We appreciated that all you had to share with your 9/11 story and the other experiences that you have had with difficult times. And that's mainly what the show is about. So we thank you for sharing your heart with us.
Well, thank you for letting me do that. Sometimes it's very comforting to be able to let it go and to know that other people have walked where I've walked before. And not that it's easy, but it's a shared experience. And so thank you very much. Thank you for opening this time for me. I appreciate it.
It's been wonderful, E. Marie. Thank you again.
Listeners, in closing, we all encounter dark periods in our lives to one degree or another. During those difficult times, strive to seek the light, knowing that when we allow it to shine through, it is so much brighter than we remembered.
Thank you for being with us today. I'd like to remind you that if you would like to listen to it again, go to pattysheene.com. That is pattysheene.com. Under the Blog Talk Radio tab, you will find a link to this show and all of the shows that we have recorded to date. Please go to Irma's website. You will also find that under her show. There's a more information tab, and that's where you will find links for her. Please remember September 11th. Take a moment to say a prayer. Take a moment of silence. Just reflect on all that was lost that day, all of those who are still feeling the effects of that horrible loss. So until next time, God bless you.
There is a candle in every soul, some brightly burning, some dark and cold. There is a spirit who brings a fire, ignites a